I got a 618. First, we got citizens' comments. Any? Those are all short agenda items. Okay. Minutes for correction and approval for July 5th, 2016. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, first item, new business, EDC 2016-42, building permit report for June and July of 2016.
Okay, in June we added 15 new single-family permits under the build program, which brings our total of single-family homes this year to 67. There's also 13 commercial permits issued. One of those would have been the Dunkin' Donuts in the Southside Town. So that's in process. If you've been down there, you'll see it. The whole frame's done on it. So they're working on that. That's the most notable one. If there's any questions about what's going on, happy to answer them.
Okay. No questions. We'll move on to item number two, EDC 2016-43, building inspection reports for June and July of 2016.
Pretty much same as every month. We had 313 inspections in June. A lot of residential and... actually, there's quite a bit of commercial also in there with the O'Reilly's, and we finished out the Sherwin Williams' inspections and added Dunkin' Donuts that month, so pretty busy in general.
Any other questions? Move on to item number three, EDC 2016-44, property maintenance report for June and July of 2016.
Okay. In June, we heard 32 property maintenance cases. This was also one of the cycles where we had... the downtown area sweep was also included in this. You can see the lumber mill on Houston Street was the one that was found liable and was fined for it. There's other ones that are also part of the downtown area, but those were dismissed due to the fact that those are the ones that are owned by Boomba, and they're going to be demolished. But they're waiting on NICOR to remove the gas lines before they can actually do the demolition on them. So with the fact they had a signed contract with the demolition company, and they had all the proper paperwork for having it all removed, we figured it would be prudent to dismiss it and just let it be. And there, hopefully, in the next couple months, you'll be able to get it done.
Any questions? Okay. Move on to item number four, EDC 2016-45, economic development update. And I'll turn that over to Lynn.
So I provided each of you with a kind of a report about what I've been working on, looking back at the month of August. Again, focusing on the downtown first, Crusade Burger Bar expanded the menu. They're going very methodically. These guys are true professionals, and they want to just make sure that they have everything worked out before they go to the next step. And they anticipate opening the former Cobblestone more toward the new year. So there's been a couple of names. I know at one time they were calling it Feast, but I don't think Feast is going to be the name of it. I think it's going to be something else. So we'll let that regurgitate a little bit. And then I continue to work with Imperial Investments on the other properties, and also I have gotten other inquiries about other spaces in the downtown. One thing that just seems to kind of happen again and again in the downtown space is someone that comes along, as it's happened many times, and they believe they could rent it for $100 a month. I'm not exaggerating. I mean, people will go like, gee, can't I rent that for like $100 a month? No. So there's plenty of those tire kickers out there, but they have to be able to... really be able to sign a commercial lease. So, and then south of the river, the Dunkin' Donuts is underway. Grocery store. I had a meeting again today with another developer who is looking at Yorkville for grocery. I sent an email to Bart because literally I got back in my office, and one of the things he did, just so you know, that one of the things that he did was, we sat at the site, then we got in the car, and he's like, I'm going to put my timer on my phone, and I'm going to drive from here. And it was about 10 to 12 in the afternoon, okay, in the morning. So, and he said, I'm going to see how long it takes me to get from here to the intersection of 34 and 47. And there was traffic on 47, and he did not go over the speed limit. And there were school buses. Was half day school today, or was it just that the kindergarten buses are out? I don't know. Because there was a lot of school buses out, because I was like, oh, this is going to be good.
Yeah.
It was 4.5 minutes. So. Hmm.
Which is good or not good?
Fast.
Which is fast if you want to drive down 47, but it's not a good thing if you're trying to get somebody to do a grocery store down there right. when we already have three at the we are very close to the intersection of 34 and 47. He's like, that's the first thing I do is, you know, because it's someone I had known and done some stuff previously, and so I said, would you come down and take a look at this property? And so he was like, absolutely. So he's like, this is the first thing we're going
to
do.
So how many minutes would it be from our Jewel to the Jewel at Orchard?
More than 4.5 minutes.
About what, 7 maybe?
7, 8 minutes. 6, 7 minutes.
Yeah. But you know,
that's 2 Jewels.
Yeah. But that's a mistake. The Jewel that is at Orchard, I don't want to speak. I guess what I want to say is, from what I know, the Jewel at Orchard and 34 was built to on the premise that the growth was going to come, and they wanted to, Jewel wanted to relocate their store that was on Route 30, and they were kind of doing some strategic moves, but the numbers that from what I understand, I believe that Jewel is not as strong as our Jewel.
There were supposed to be upwards of 900 multifamily units built on Orchard just north of the railroad. And that was a major component of that approval was that they were expecting high density growth along the corridor,
okay.
which never materialized.
Right.
So that one is an oddball. It should not be there demographically.
Right. People tell me that, though. If I tell them what you just told me, that's what I hear. Or I'll hear
something. Ours makes sense.
Or I'll hear something about Aldi's. Someplace you can go and find an Aldi, almost like Walgreens. It's depending on. They look for more like 71 going toward Oswego. That's a high traffic area going. Those people aren't going to get off of there and come to the north side of town.
I understand. I just have to tell you.
Okay.
Because I'm working on this. I'm giving this a lot of attention. Yeah. I'm trying to reach out to everybody that I could think of, people that I can't think of. I am really casting the net out.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first comment that I received today. So, you know, I'm not saying that it's not going to happen. I'm just saying that, that the thing that I hear the most, because we drove around, is, well, where are the subdivisions? Where are the rooftops? Okay, and we look at it on the map, and we go, okay, well, there's here, and there's here, and there's here, and there's here. Okay, where else? Well, you know, that's it. So, you know, I just want to be. I'm not saying I'm giving up. I'm not saying, you know, I'm going at it. I'm going at it. I'm going Thursday. I have another meeting, but I'm just saying that. And I'm also saying to you all that if there was a building down there that was in existence, and it was a 30,000-square-foot building or a 25,000-square-foot building, I believe that was already built, second generation. I believe that we could have a grocery store south of the town. But the dilemma is that there is no building down there for them to go into. And if you want to build a building, a 30,000-square-foot building, let's say, and you buy what you need to buy and do what you need to do, it's a $5 million investment. So, yeah. So it's sort of the story that I've been hearing, and so I just want to make sure that, you know. But we're not giving up, and I had this guy out there. And he, of course, said, you know, okay, I'm going to take it back to my people, and we'll see what we can do, but... But that was the first thing he said to me. Let's take this ride. And I couldn't believe it was 4.5 minutes. I mean, it felt like it was longer. I was looking at it because we're sitting in the car and he had like a little thing going, and I'm watching. I'm thinking, no way, it can't be 4.5 minutes. It's got to be longer than that.
There was a time it wouldn't. It was a lot longer.
Yeah. There was a time when it was a lot longer.
Yeah. 20 minutes.
And we did catch one light, and that was at 126. So. So we were at the site, we came through, we caught the light at 126, waited, but then we were stopped by the light at 126 and 47. So, but again, we just keep trucking along. The other thing that I want to talk about south of the river is Birch is in motion. They're, obviously they're getting ready to go vertical as well. And she's operating out of Fountain Village right now. But I wrote triple M. I don't know what my mind was on with M's, but it's 777 Motorsports. They've signed a lease. That was the, motorized four-wheelers. And she signed a lease in the D&H Ag building. I just refer to it as that because I think people call it that. It's the big brown building on the west side of 47 south of the river. She's going to open it by selling parts and accessories, and she's going to have to go through a rezoning on that piece. So we're meeting with her on Friday to kind of start that process. But she's also talking to Yamaha, which would be great because it would be a great sales tax generator. So I'm hoping that could move forward. It'll be a lot of people out here seem to like vehicles and toys and stuff like that. So I think it'd be great. Kenneth Bossing is here, and we're going to meet with Kenneth Marketplace. I have too many Kenneth Marketplace here. We're continuing to work with them on inline space, and we're hoping that we're going to be able to announce something relatively soon for a new national retailer. And actually, the owner, Alex Berman, I've been working with him and CBRE with them to host a golf outing for the commercial brokerage community. It's going to be at Blackberry Oaks on September 29th. And Bart and Gary and myself are going to attend. And the idea will be that the people will come out to the site. They'll get a little tour, get some information about the shopping center. This is very, very generous and very, different than most owners of shopping centers would do, but again, we're very fortunate to have Alex. And so, all the brokers will go over to Blackberry Oaks, they'll get lunch, they'll golf, and then they're going to have an appetizer buffet. So, something unique to draw the people out to Yorkville to take a look at the site, because a lot of times people think, where is Yorkville? So, Alex is trying something different. And we're hoping to have a good turnout. I know that the invitations were over 100 people invited. So even if they get 40 to 50 people, I think they would be very happy with that. So that is what's happening there in Kendall Crossing. You continue to work with them, obviously, as well on the site. There's a couple other tenants that are looking at the site. And continue to work with my very big industrial user on El Domain Road. See where that takes us, and I continue to work with Justine and her recreational center.
Where is she at right now?
She's closed on the property,
right,
the city,
right.
And so now the meetings are working with the key people of building the building. So kind of working out a timetable as to when does she start. She wants to, have the optimum time to open. So. First she was thinking about actually starting the build now, in the fall. But I think it looks more like it's probably going to be in the spring. So,
What about the, I think a bigger thing in her way will be getting the roadway stuff done. Right?
No.
I mean, construction-wise, won't that take... that's not just instantaneously going to happen, will it?
It shouldn't be very difficult. It's a county road, so it's a county permit.
Yeah. Fran has been working with them, and they have to do like a right in, like a turning, a decel lane.
Decel lane, right.
Yeah.
I just figured that would be one of the hang-ups that they run into at first.
Yeah. I think county will be very accommodating.
Yeah.
Work with that one. They're much better than any of the...
Okay. Yeah, she's very fortunate that she's dealing with them. So I think right now it's more of a logistics. It's like, okay, there's the road, there's this, there's all these different components. So it's like kind of getting a schedule that's going to work. So when she goes to start, when is she going to start? I do not believe it will be this fall. I think it will be in the spring. So, but she is not... twiddling her thumbs, like not doing anything. She is a busy girl. We're, doing multiple meetings and trying to get everything kind of worked out. So, And then I wanted to let everybody know, you know, Yorkville is a member of KEDA, which is Kendall Economic Development Alliance Group, and there's going to be an economic forecast breakfast. It's on Friday, October 21st. It's hosted by all of the communities, so as our economic group. And Rick Mattoon, who's a very sought-after speaker, he's the head senior economist from the Federal Reserve Bank, is going to be the speaker. He came out about 3 years ago. It was very engaging, very good event. And last time we had probably about 100 people. So this actually, when we do these alliance events, whether it be a job fair or something like this, it allows, there's a lot of people that are in multiple communities in Kendall County, and it makes us have the event be more successful and draw a larger group. So I would encourage you to take a look at it. $30. Attend if you can. Pass it on to someone you know that you think it will be a worthwhile use of 2 hours of your time, basically from 7:30 to 9:30. And it works like this. 7:30 it starts, 9:30 it's done. You get to leave. So that's what I have.
Yeah. Chris, anything?
Good.
Thank you. Okay. We'll move on to item number 5, EDC 2016-46, Ordinance Amending the City Code as it relates to littering.
Okay, this is more of a housekeeping item. We noticed that in our current code, when it comes to citing individuals for littering, the section in the code just is a simple statement, and it basically says refer to the State Litter Control Act. What we found an issue with is when we tried to send our inspectors out to issue a citation, the State Litter Control Act actually says that a police officer has to issue the citation. So it cannot be one of our property maintenance inspectors or a building code official. So what we did in earnest is just took all the language from the State Litter Control Act and we just adopted it and added it in text form and wanted it to be codified in our ordinance. So A, that we have the ability to cite certain sections. B, our building code and property maintenance inspectors can go out and do citations. And also it helps us in some of those gray areas where we didn't have language in the code where we were previously citing them under the property maintenance code or the junk, trash, and refuse code to add more restrictions on littering, actually have more sites that we can add additional citations to that we only would have had one area to cite. We can have multiple areas to cite now. It'll help. There's a couple examples in there. There was one situation where people were transporting garbage to a unfinished subdivision, and what we ended up doing was, because of the way the code was written, we would actually cite the owner of the property where the refuse was dumped. But they weren't necessarily the responsible party, but that's the only mechanism that we had in our code. So now we want to be able to not only cite properties that have debris on them, but cite those specific individuals where we know the debris is coming from. We actually had a situation where we opened up the garbage and we knew exactly what address it came from, but we couldn't cite that individual. So we're asking that we just adopt this language, add it into our code so that now we have additional arsenal when it goes to citing litter and trash in the city, and it can go beyond just our police officers if they see the event happening. And this is something that we're asking to be sent on to City Council.
You just said something. It's if they see it happening, this cannot be something reported. If somebody has pictures of somebody or has recorded somebody doing it, can that be used as evidence in order to cite somebody?
Not in my opinion. I think that if we were, yes, if we were actually in court, we could subpoena them to come in, they could testify and whatever else.
But not direct adjudication.
But in adjudication, the hearing officer most likely would say, if that person were willing to come in, because we can, if they assign a ticket, they assign a complaint, they can come in and actually speak directly to the hearing officer about what they witnessed. And I would say, I wrote the ticket on behalf of this resident because they showed me information standing there and they wanted to have a complaint and they wanted to come in and testify. The police department does that also with certain disrupting the peace tickets. And if the person comes in, then he handles it like almost like they are the representative of the city. That's almost the way it looks like it's treated. But 99% of the time, the people that send the complaints don't come in.
Okay.
But what happens is a lot of times, like, even at like city parks, you see someone throw a piece of trash out a window. Well, I'd have to call the police department. I'd have to sit there and wait. When the officer got there, I'd have to relay what happened and hope that person was gone. And we run 2 to 3 officers. So it just makes it so that we can
But we're still basically relying on staff at any level, or staff as in inspectors to enforce the code.
To write a citation out of the city ordinance, we have to have a badge number, which is only me and Bob
so
have.
It's going
to
be our inspectors or police officer.
Yes. Okay. And Christy can. There was some talk about having some of the water department people get badge numbers so they can write tickets for water. I don't know if that had happened this year or not. And that they would be able to do it too, in theory, but I think they'd be more comfortable handling us or the police department handle it.
Okay. So in terms of enforcement, this is it's still very limited in enforceability due to the limited personnel we have available to it, but it does expand the scope of the enforcement that we have ability to enforce. Correct?
It gives us more clear language under which to enforce. So it strengthens our ability to do it. Pete, you know, has had more experience with the adjudication process here directly than I have. But I guess I would think that if a resident shows up with a photo or a video of their neighbor dumping yard waste in an empty lot, mm-hmm. that the adjudicator would view that evidence and take it into account.
Okay.
So, you know, it strengthens our ability to be able to respond and to find different angles in which to directly get compliance.
We do have opportunity in the hearing process, if you were there earlier,
yeah.
to present evidence on our city's behalf, and basically just kind of the way we present the evidence. And for example, the one we have with the people thrown, we opened up the garbage bags and found utility bills, credit card statements, you know, gasoline receipts, you know, homework from the children at the address of an adjacent property. And we spoke to the property owner. He said he had told his kid he would take the garbage out. The kid just threw it in the neighbor's yard. Well, unresponsible children, still your parents are still responsible for
responsible
that.
Party. Yes.
So, you know, things like that. And a lot of times, you know, if I go out to a rental home, the trash is going all over the yard. If I grab a bill and I see that it's got the name of it and the address is the one next door neighbor, currently I'd have to write a ticket.
Just the owner of their
yeah.
apartment.
Mm-hmm. Even if it was your house, it was your neighbor's trash, technically it's your property, it's your trash. But if I can prove it's theirs...
Well, this is good. I think this is good. I just want to make sure that we have the abilities to actually enforce it if we're going to change it. Mm-hmm. And it sounds to an extent we do have that ability. So, okay.
Is there a time frame for when something becomes trash? Like, let's say you had somebody building a house. And they have a dumpster sitting on another piece of property, and all the leftover stuff from the house build getting built. And they say the house is taking forever, but that stuff's getting thrown in that dumpster and sitting on an empty lot. Does that have a certain time period where okay, they're just storing trash there, or is it? How does that work?
Yeah, technically that would go by the length of their permit, so they would technically have a calendar year for most. Things like a new construction home.
So whatever however long their permit was for the house they're building, they're allowed to have that dumpster on another lot. Okay.
Yeah, and it's, in general, a lot of times we'll go up there and people will dump illegally in there and they'll dump things that don't really smell very good. Construction debris in general, while it can blow out, it doesn't actually have any odor or anything like that. If I go by a dumpster and I see that it really has like a follow order for people dumping landscape waste, 9 times out of 10, I'll call the dumpster company. Just grab the phone, call them, and say, hey, you got a dumpster, and it really smells really bad. I know it's not. He goes, oh, yeah, no problem. We'll come pick it up. They pick it up and just exchange it, and they don't even charge the builder anything.
Okay.
Because they figure it's their name, it's their thing, and if it's on, when it's on a vacant lot, usually they put it right over the curb. So that first 4 foot of that dumpster is on city property, technically, because the parkway is technically city property. So they know that I could say, remove it and don't bring it back. So they're more than happy to just exchange it real quick. So if you've got a problem with that, just call us. We'll take care of it.
All right. Okay, that should go to the city council next, right?
Yes.
Which is the very next meeting?
That can go to the next meeting.
Okay.
We've already drafted the ordinance, so
okay.
It's ready
so
to be approved.
So it's 3-0, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Item number 6, EDC 2016-47 Sugar Grove Boundary Agreement.
Okay. As you recall, in our comprehensive plan discussions, we've talked about some of the implementation strategies are to extend our boundary agreements with the existing communities that we have agreements with and also look at other communities that we don't. One first step of this process, we've reached out to Sugar Grove. Actually, Sugar Grove reached out to us. We have a current boundary agreement that's set to expire in April 2020, so we want to be a little bit proactive. We went through the actual agreement and looked at areas that were moot, no longer something that we need to consider, and areas that we need to strengthen, and I highlighted it in the section that talks about our existing agreement. And one of the areas that we took a lot of language out of had to do with Baseline Road. And we just provided some templates of what we were looking for as far as Baseline Road language regarding who's obligated to what in each municipality if development were to happen. How would we look at improvements on there? How would we look at if a third-party agency were to come in and take over the road? So those are some of the areas that we tackled in regards to Baseline Road. We also added a couple of new items, and they're highlighted in the memo as well. One talks about revisions to any boundary agreement that does not preclude either municipality from filing a statutory objection, which means if there was something that was happening on Yorkville side that the individuals in Sugar Grove didn't like, they can still have the ability to file that objection. At first, the language is limited to just special uses, but we expanded that language to include any land use change. That could be a rezoning, special use, any of those variants, those types of things that would happen within that area if we don't feel that it's complementary to what we're looking for in our 1.5 jurisdictional boundary. We also added language, which was item 16, that talks about our previous agreement that we had with Sugar Grove, and then there was a actual lawsuit that happened in that area. So language was added by Sugar Grove's attorney just to say that, you know, anything that was previously agreed upon, that had ceded that land that acceded to Montgomery, that we would not, you know, that previous agreement would stand and we would not object to that. Staff does recommend adoption of this extension. It will be actually for another 20 years, so to 2036. And if there's any questions, or they've already run this through their board.
Okay, so Baseline Road, just a little more summary about what's going to be involved with that.
Sure. So there are four bullet points. So the first bullet point talks about, as I mentioned, obligations of each municipality. So there's a recapture ordinance for 50% for the cost for any roadway improvements made by any developer on each side of that road. We just agreed to some specific standards on how Baseline would be improved if a developer were to come along and to improve that area of the road. There's language that talks about, as I mentioned before, the third-party agency would take over. How would we agree upon to let that happen? We would cooperate with any agency that came in. We've already discussed, actually, with Public Works, that this is not a road that we particularly want, for better use of the term. So we had language in there just in case another larger agency that had the ability to take over that roadway would operate in that way, that we would agree. Each municipality agreed that no further expansion of improvements to Baseline Road west of 47 would be made without consulting the other municipality. We're talking about the nature and the scope of those improvements. And then any major repairs or maintenance to Baseline Road, each party would have to agree to a 50-50 share, cost sharing. So that's why it's a very expensive improvement on Baseline Road, and that's why we had that language in there, because half of it is in our municipal boundaries, half of it is in their municipal boundaries, and we would need to coordinate with making those payments or making those arrangements of how it would be funded.
So in the scenario that it was damaged and couldn't be used anymore, how would that play out with this new agreement?
It wouldn't. The agreement only plays into when you have a development adjacent to to the project.
So in that case, though, what happens? Let's say they say you can't drive across it anymore.
Who says? The city?
Well, whatever the powers are.
IDOT says that the bridge is closed.
Yeah, whatever reason.
It's inaccessible from 47.
How does that work then in this?
Well, that was the language that talks about if a third party were to come in and say that this road is no longer usable or accessible, then we would agree to that other third party taking over that road.
So they would be the ones that would close it then, essentially. And we wouldn't be forced
to... cooperate with...
So the road right now is city control.
Okay.
It's entirely within our authority. Sugar Grove is still a couple miles away from approaching it. The county, the township, and the state wouldn't have really any desire or input into the process of how bad the bridge, well, the bridge, IDOT does, but how bad the roadway is and whether to close the bridge. You know, if we were to say we don't want to replace the bridge, we're going to close the roadway, we would approve the contract to do so, we would notify the other entities, but that would be it. We would pay for it 100%. When the roadway is ready to be repaved, we have to pay for that 100%. So really, until development from Sugar Grove comes down to this area, which I don't know that it ever will, actually, that's when these recapture agreements and everything else comes into place. So unfortunately, it doesn't help us with having to pay for $1 million project now.
Right now, we will still bear the brunt of all costs.
100%.
That's yeah. What I thought. I mean,
right.
Oh, I'm sorry. Grow, that confusion. Yeah. That
I thought maybe this is saying that we're going to do 50-50 with Sugar Grove.
This is just the agreement for our boundary goes to 30, baseline road. Sugar Grove doesn't go there, so we still bear full maintenance obligations for that road. So that's...
I was thinking from the way this read that it would be 50-50 now.
Okay, if they came in with the development or we came in with the development, then it triggers the shared fees. But until that point, we bear all maintenance responsibilities for a road that we receive no benefits for.
Okay.
On the record.
Yep.
Yeah. Did you have any other questions?
No, I think this is a good agreement to put in place. Or to renew it.
Okay, then I think it's 3-0 to renew it. And that goes to City Council, right?
There's a public hearing.
Oh, public hearing, okay.
Maybe we can do Kendall Marketplace before we go to the build program.
Yep. Item number 8, PZC 2016-03, Kendall Marketplace, sign variance.
Okay. So this has to do with the Kendall Marketplace sign along on the north side of Route 34 and Isabel Drive. There's an existing monument sign. That's the main sign for the Kendall Marketplace. Since 34 is being expanded, the lot line is changing and the right-of-way is growing. So therefore, the sign, which we require monument signs to be 5 feet away from any lot line, it's now going to be within a foot with the new right-of-way line. So that sign will now become a legal non-conforming sign. So that's okay, but we have something within our zoning code that mentions that within 5 years of non-compliance, the sign has to be taken down or moved. Kendall Marketplace and representative of the petitioner is here. If you have any questions, but they're requesting it now. Instead of, they could do it within any of the next 5 years to request a variance, but they're doing it now. They're being proactive to get it done. It should be noted, the sign and the sidewalk there and all the right-of-way where the actual road is all going to stay the same, just the actual right-of-way is growing. And I believe there's going to be a bike trail put in. But in terms of the sign to the actual pavement of where cars go, is staying the same.
Oh, okay, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah, that distance, that's not expanding. So the sign's really going to just be the same where it is.
Chris?
As many of you know, I'm not someone that likes having variances for signage or other purposes for the most part, especially regarding signage. This instance, though, is one that I would agree with the variance for the fact that the geometry is not changing. The road is not encroaching any closer. We're not creating additional issues. It's a line that exists in space. So, from my stance, I have no issue with it since it doesn't affect the actual geometry that's out there to date. So.
Okay. I am fine also.
And one more note, too. So this wouldn't be moved forward to the City Council. It would be approved by the PZC because it's a government body, an eminent domain case. So within our code as well, it says those can be approved by PZC.
I'm not going to go and lobby them to. No, I'm good with it.
Okay. All right, then. We go for that. Lastly, item number 7 under the new business, EDC 2016-48, extension of the build program.
All right, build program. We're all pretty familiar with it. It's the incentive program for single-family development. It's a program that's been going on since 2012. We're merely wishing to extend the program another year. It, technically, at the moment right now, it went out December 31st, 2016. We're requesting expansion to one more year, so till December 31st, 2017. We continue to take surveys and get results and get information from the people who are actually utilizing it. Remarks have consistently been high. Majority of people find it very influential to build a single-family home here, almost 80%. Also, people saying they were looking around at other communities, 68% said the build program was why they built here. And then in terms of building permits comparatively to our neighbors, we still rank really high, and we've been going up as some of our neighbors have been either staying the same or going down, so other than Plainfield. I was actually on the phone with a guy from Montgomery. Theirs have gone down a lot, and he says a lot of others have gone down because they're actually running out of stock of vacant single-family parcels. So why us and so probably us and Plainfield are up. Plainfield's probably got more of a stock of single-family platted lots. So this is just asking for an extension of the build program, and this would be moved forward to City Council. Okay.
When we're, if I could,
yep, okay.
We're talking about the numbers for the time of the permits. That what's represented in the chart is total.
Total permits.
Starts. Yeah, they are total housing starts, not the build alone.
Correct.
What was our number this year for build to date?
53 or something.
Out of 100.
I can tell you right now.
53 or something.
I thought we were in the
64 would be of last month.
Okay, so 64 as of last month.
Right.
Oh, I already have a couple
this month. I just looked at a couple this month, so.
So clearly still the bulk of them are coming through as build permit housing starts. Which is very good for the program. It's good for our numbers, especially with the reporting that we have that somewhere close to 80% of them, the decision was based on coming to Yorkville based on the build program. I still support the program.
Me too.
I do have concern about the program going forward in its longevity, and I say that not because I don't support the program, just due to our financial outlook. I had conversations with our Public Works Director about the program and his concerns about the different parts of the budget. Looking forward, I think maybe this is something where we start pulling it back or we cap it. I still think it's a functional program, but I think it's time to start looking and seeing if we have legs for the building, for the market, without the program or with a smaller program.
But you're thinking about maybe like the next year.
Correct. Not this year. This year I'd support continuing, but I'd like to look at either capping it or starting to scale it back in some aspect.
In 18.
What's that? In 18, yes. Yeah, exactly. Right, because we're talking 17 fiscal year, but in 18. Right.
I'm going to piggyback on his concerns, and my biggest reason is I can't say no to that in want my grocery store, so I got to make sure every house gets built over in that area, and I got two subdivisions that really feed into that. So in my ward, so I wish if I could have it my way, I would like to see the build program have its own line item in the budget, and then so okay, if you're going to waive the fees, you transfer that amount of fee back to the waters department fee, and you take it. You budget in the build program budget, and then you just take that and move it. The what they gave up in the water department, and you transfer. That would be ultimately what I like to see, but I don't know. I don't think it's has happened yet. And I also am a little concerned, maybe that I don't want to see us cheat services because we waived fees, and that's what I'm worried that down the road that, you know, if you didn't take the fees because of the build program, and it comes time to put a park or something else you should be doing normally, then it's not right to cheat on that either then, if you're going to waive the fee, just because you waived the fee. So I worry that that could be a problem down the road, and so I shared Chris's, maybe their budget can take it, and you can go from there and you see how much you allow of it down the road. But
and obviously a program like this, in the short term, we take a hit, but in the long term, there's a financial benefit to more housing starts, greater tax base, greater financial impact to the city overall, but it takes a while to recoup that. And that's the hard part, is we have to take the brunt on it, which I've been an advocate for this program since day one. But at some point, we have to look at, is it something that we're just creating a welfare program for our own building starts until we actually have a return coming in? And we do have a return, because we have a much higher number of housing starts than we would have probably had otherwise. And I know there are critics that sit on the council that will say, well, how do you know that they wouldn't have built here?
You don't know until you try the experiment.
The best we can do is buy their comments that they provide back to us, the home buyers' comments.
But then, in all fairness, anyone that took in the build program, I can't imagine that they would be disappointed when they get $10,000.
You're right.
I mean, I'd be shocked if there's very many people that are disappointed that took the program to win.
I'm still fine with that.
So I think, yeah, it's 3-0 to continue for another year. Maybe if some of those suggestions, if you tweak it to some point, I don't know if that budget, there must be a reason that we haven't done it with a budget of its own. Because you kind of did it recently, you know, when you amended it, right? The last budget, you just amended a budget for build in our last council meeting, wasn't it?
Just to address how the program is aimed, it didn't necessarily change the net impact. And I know you and I have had the conversation over the phone, and maybe bits and pieces in a committee or a city council meeting, but, and Carlo, I think, has expressed similar sentiments, is that instead of showing it in the individual departments, you'd show it as a function of the general fund. And so that way none of the water funds or anything are being shorted as a result of this. But, you know, what we've seen in the past week proves my point exactly as to why you wouldn't want to do that. The bond rating agency gave us an upgrade because our general fund financials were so strong. So you really want to short all the other funds that they don't care about. And really there's no net impact to the city. It's just where it's shown. And then, you know, hopefully as a result of it, you end up receiving a benefit from it through maybe we were able to refinance and save ourselves a couple $100,000 at some point or another, or the next time we go out to issuance, it would help. So that's really the only reason I mentioned is that I do see that as a direct influence, on a potential bond rating upgrade or downgrade. So you are only talking about a couple $100,000 every year still. So it might not be material enough to make them change their mind, but I'd rather just, you know, kind of keep giving them all good reasons to continue to give us upgrades rather than short it a little bit. So.
Okay. Take the forward for you. Old business. Any items? Additional business. Any items? Okay. Meeting adjourned. 7:02.